And I guess now we're getting the RTCT. Whoever wants to go first, Mr. Jones.
Most of the first.
This is fun.
I guess I'm going first. While they get their technology set up. I just want to report back to you tonight a little bit about what we've been doing in the math department. The Common Core is in full implementation in K through 8. We are in the midst, we're in the first year of the Go Math program, which, as every year, every first year is tough, plus it is the first year of the Common Core, and there are a lot of changes. But there are some things that the teachers really like about the Go Math. They really like the fact that it is very closely aligned with the Common Core. There are a lot of real world connections, which again, goes with the Common Core. It addresses all students. So there's activities for tier one, tier two, tier three, for ELL, for AIS. All of those materials, and they're all aligned together, so everybody's on the same page, pulling in the same direction, which is great. They have very challenging assessments, which are very similar to the New York State assessments. They have professional development podcasts, so if there are questions or areas that teachers are not really comfortable with, they can access these podcasts. It was unfortunate that we were not able to do the training for the new course, the new program, before school started, but with NWEA and all those other things, it just wasn't possible. So everybody has been trained. We had a wonderful trainer. She was a retired teacher. She had been teaching for about 30 years, elementary teacher. She was great. Everybody loved her. She answered a lot of questions. So I think everybody's feeling more comfortable, but it's going to take some time. Also, another program we have is Mobi Math, which they're using in 4 through 6. And it's an online program that is aligned with Common Core, has all the key ideas. Students can access it at home for practicing skills. They can access it here. Some of the teachers use it as like a center activity when they break their kids down into centers. It's very individualized, so students can work on things that are their needs or their enrichment. It can go either way. It monitors the progress of students in the Common Core. In 7 through 12, we are getting ready, gearing up for the implementation, well, in 9 through 12 of the Common Core for next year. We're also setting up or working on developing an accelerated 7th grade math class. In the appendix of the Common Core document, they have broken down the key ideas so that in 7 and 8, they can do the 7th, 8th, and 9th grade math, so they'll still take the region at the end of 8th grade. Next year's 8th grade class, unfortunately, the algebra in the Common Core is much more difficult than what it is now. So next year's 8th grade class, we're going to have to think outside the box and figure out ways that we can support them in their success with this new program. So, you know, some of the ideas we talked about is possibly doing something in the summer, you know, before they go in, having additional math class during the day, like an AIS enrichment class, an after school program, something. We haven't decided exactly how we're going to do that, but we need to come up with support for those students. We're not really sure 100% whether the state is going to allow full credit for Algebra A and Algebra B, but anyway, we're working on developing an A and a B curriculum for those classes. They have an online service in, that they're using, program that they're using in the high school called IXL Math, which is similar to Mobi Math. And the AIS teachers are using it. Cindy Dietersmith is using it. And it's, again, aligned with the Common Core. And they actually have, even in geometry and algebra too, so if students feel that they're weak in a prerequisite skill, they can go on themselves, they can access at home, they can, again, access it in school. Sometimes the teachers will recognize a weakness or see a weakness and recommend to the student or assign a student practice in that, in those particular skills. They actually get, this is just a report, this came from Bob Reed from his classes for geometry, and they got a little certificate from the company. They've solved 10,000 problems.
Can I take another one for Bob? Bob, do you? Thank you.
Rosanna, I didn't understand what you meant about an A and a B.
I'm sorry, what?
The A and the B.
Oh, algebra is broken down currently. It's broken down into two sections for students that struggle.
Sorry, what grade level are we talking about?
9 and 10.
In ninth grade?
They would take algebra A.
Uh-huh.
In 10th grade, they take algebra B. And they get 2 credits for that. They get credit for algebra A and credit for algebra B. There has been some rumblings in the state that that may not be the case, but we don't know.
Did those kids take algebra in 8th grade?
No.
Okay.
No.
But the Regents would be at the end of the second.
Would be, the Regents would be at the end of algebra B.
Okay. 10th grade. And you're saying you're going to start another math selection in 7th grade?
Yeah, for accelerated.
So right now, all the 7th graders take the same math.
Right.
But the future is that there'll be 2 options in 7th grade math.
Right.
And those kids who take the accelerated math in 7th grade
will take the algebra Regents, algebra in 8th grade.
They take the algebra right now in 8th grade, and they take the Regents in 8th grade. You're saying start the prep for that class
in 7th grade. Which is a recommendation of the state.
Okay.
And it's in the appendix, and we've actually broken it all down. Because what happens is very often, the way it is now, they end up skipping a lot of things, and it catches up. And students that take the algebra Regents also have to be successful in the New York State assessment, so which is testing your skills in 8th grade math. So by spreading it out over the 2 years, they set it up so they don't miss anything. It's going to be pretty fast-paced, but everything will be covered. So they should be successful in both the New York State assessments as well as the Regents.
Okay, thank you.
And that's going to be offered only as an accelerated version, not for all students.
Right.
But just to really understand that, if those kids don't do that program in 7th and 8th, that's okay, because they're going to do it in 9th and 10th. Yep.
They're going to take algebra, right.
Okay.
And actually, they're working on developing a flow chart. So students, sometimes students mature at different levels. So sometimes if they're not ready to accelerate in 7th grade or 8th grade, we're still trying to figure out a path where at, so they want to accelerate later on, like in 9th grade. Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure out a path where students can do that and still take like an AP course in their senior year. So
we'll be ready on March 11th to bring that program to you.
Okay.
Mr. Sauer will be presenting that night on proposed electives to add at the high school, as well as, not Mr. Sauer presenting, but probably actually Rosanna or I will present what our accelerated program will look like at 7th and 8th grade, what we'll be recommending. So,
just math or just the whole accelerated?
Well, right now, just math, but there's, of course, discussion on a second accelerated option as well. So March 11th.
Okay. We're also looking at samples of new textbooks for high school, and we have samples. The teachers are looking at them. They're actually doing sample lessons from the different ones. We're not going to rush into that because being the first year of the Common Core, you can always expect changes along the way. So we're going to kind of really examine them and figure out the best way to go. And just the last thing, kind of a little aside, we have wrapped up our winter assessment for MAP assessment. Is all finished. It went well. We're way ahead of the learning curve. They told us it takes about 3 years for it to run smoothly, and knock on wood, we really had no problems this time. So, and a lot of credit to our proctors. They did a wonderful job. Donna Merritt and Marianne Hope, Brendan Sheehan, Caitlin Brennan, and Patty Sheehan. They did a great job doing makeups, you know, working around the snow days and rescheduling. And of course, the tech department, Craig and Kenneth, you know, were very supportive too. So I think things are going well.
Thank you. This is just a quick kind of off the wall question. Do textbooks typically come with digital versions now, or is that like a huge extra cost?
No, it's not. Actually, the Go Math, there's a lot of technology that goes with it. And again, the students all have passwords. So assignments can be given online with this program. There's no additional cost.
Excellent.
And they can access that at home, as can the parents.
Right.
So,
or I forgot my book.
There is no I forgot the book, because everything's in the book is also online. So if the dog ate the paper, you can print off another one.
Right,
no excuses. So yes, there's a real strong technology piece.
Great.
To Go Math and to the seventh and eighth grade.
So, because right now, the eighth grade math, there's no particular textbook. And there's...
Yes, there is. There's a textbook.
But the course you're referring to might be the accelerated course.
Yeah, I'm talking about the
algebra class.
He's trying to teach two.
Okay, no, there isn't yet, but there will be.
That probably should get nailed down, because it's, you know, just as a parent of an eighth grader, that was, you know, well, where's your text? Show me what you're working on. Show me, and it's fine with me for her to say it's on the website, but that isn't what she said. You know, the answer was, we don't have a text.
We are looking at them, though. We really are.
Excellent.
And we have several different versions, several different companies that the teachers have copies of, and they're trying them out. So they're coming.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rosetta.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Let's go next.
I'm Denise Conway, and this is Karen Keyes. We're here tonight just to give a very quick overview of the new social studies program that the district purchased for the beginning of this year. It was purchased, I think, last spring. Karen came, I know, and gave an overview to the board at that point. And so basically, we just want to tell you how it's going and what the feedback is from the teachers. So I just thought it would be helpful if you could see at the actual website. This is the one I work from, the sixth grade social studies curriculum. And you can see here just all of the things that I have access to. Let's see, I'll just click on this, yes, to show you. It's just very, very user-friendly. Lots of resources. Right there you can see on the drop-down box the different things that I can access, print off, and use for my lesson. They give you the standards, there's an overview of the lesson. I can print out the lesson plan. There's a SmartBoard file I can access, PowerPoint presentation, maps, graphic organizers, homework assignment. There's often rubrics, so I can use to grade the homework assignments, which, because it's cross-curricular, are very often ELA-focused, writing a paragraph, writing a three-paragraph essay, those kinds of things. In the upper grades, in 4, 5, 6, there is close cross-curricular integration between ELA and social studies. In the lower grades, K-3, they were kind of one and the same, yeah. They teach social studies.
Sometimes you can do it at the same time. So, especially in kindergarten, where it's a lot of social and community skills, and the kindergarten teachers themselves have even said that it fits in perfectly to their ELA curriculum. So K-2, you really don't have an ELA class and a social studies class. It's designed to do it simultaneously, so it works beautifully. And like Denise said, in the upper grades, a lot of the skills that they are doing is using the ELA Common Core curriculum to do all of the nonfiction and research-based instruction.
And then it also gives us the vocabulary. So there's, a glossary of terms, so we can introduce those to the students. There's often a list of books and websites that we can use with the students. A lot of these lessons at the upper level, 4, 5, 6, especially sixth grade, are integrate hands-on use of the computers. So we'll come to the computer lab, or I'll get the laptop parts and bring them into the classroom, which of course the students love, and that way it's very hands-on. So that's just a very quick overview. I invite anybody to come to my classroom during social studies time if you want to see how it works, you know, with the real class, because I think the students like it. And next year, we'll have our feet under us because we started the program and then got our training, just like Rosanna said, with the math. So by next year, we'll be familiar with it, we'll be using it full blast, and then I'm sure we'll be able to do a lot more with it as well.
And recently, the program is has gone national. So there's a lot of credit to that.
And then the feedback. Do you want to talk
about it? There was feedback. Katie was nice enough to poll the K-3 staff on the feedback, and Denise and I spoke to the only three other social studies, not including Denise, too, who do the social studies program. And overall, they like how hands-on it is and how easy it is to use. It's very user-friendly. They provide a lot of great resources, the list of books, websites, it comes with smart board units. It was noted that because they didn't have the training until school started, it's been a slow rollout. So we're expecting come September that the program is in full use, K-6, for next year.
Right, and then the other piece that's still outstanding, and we've been working with Mr. Brown, is the discovery learning. A lot of the, most of the units, discovery learning is embedded and is an everyday resource. So we're talking, hopefully, going to be able to work out actually purchasing access to discovery learning because there are a lot of valuable things in there, and it really is an integral part of the program.
Can you just, discovery learning, is that on the web?
On the web,
okay,
yes.
So that's another cost to
it
add
is,
to this.
Yes,
okay.
Unfortunately it is, but because it's used throughout the whole program, we'll be using it all year long, so I consider it to be a valuable resource for the price, but that's what we're working on right now. And the other thing that's nice about this program, which I didn't mention, is the people who created it at Putnam Boces are updating it all along the way, so it's not a static program.
It's a living, breathing.
It's constantly changing and evolving. As they get feedback, as new resources are created, they're adding those in and changing it all the time. And then they'll send those changes back to us. So that makes it very, just very modern and up-to-date, I think.
It's made for the teachers by the teachers, and I think that's an excellent tool to have.
You missing anything, or is there anything that's not up to your expectation, or right now it's fun?
It is fun. There are some of the units or lessons where you can see, ooh, they need to flesh this out more, which you don't discover until you use it. And so sometimes I'm still looking for resources of my own to pull in, but there are others that are really well thought out and very full. You almost can't get to all of the parts of the lesson. So I think it's a working process.
Hopefully discovery learning you can add to. Because 4-6 is heavily, it's content. And a lot of that, because this does not, there's no textbook that goes with it. It's all documents and resources and all these web-based videos that we can have access to. And so Denise has to go and find other resources to use.
Currently. So, and then it's just so nicely laid out for the teachers. You don't have to write the lesson plans. You don't have to find which standards it goes with. That's all done for you, and it's all right there, very clear. So every day you're looking at it and seeing all of those connections.
That's great. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can spend your time
teaching. Anything else we can? Any questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kevin?
But when I start reading, I'm like, what's the effluent?
I know.
I'm like, okay, enough already.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
No worries, thank you very much.
So as you know, we have Jeff Boudreau here. He's an engineer employed by Rhinebeck Architecture, and he's here to speak about our septic issues.
Okay. Thank you to the board. I don't get to speak about things that are quite as interesting as the last few people. I'm really envious about that. High school is a long ways away, but that really looks like a lot of fun. I'm going to talk about something that's a little bit less fun tonight, and that's the Weebatuck Wastewater Disposal System, sometimes known as the septic system. In very blunt terms, wastewater leaves the building and it has to go somewhere. And there's a treatment system that exists on this site for treating that. It's called a septic system. It flows through a septic tank, and then it goes into what we call a leach field. And the leach field has been having some difficulties recently. So was retained by the Weebatuck School District to take a look at some things. And tonight, I'm really just going to focus on a couple of things here. We're going to talk a little bit about the history of the site. Part of what we did in our study was to try and determine what's causing some of the problems out there and whether or not the problems are big or small. We also did a literature search of the Dutchess County Department of Health files. The design of wastewater treatment systems on this site is subject to the regulatory approval by the local health department, in this case, the Dutchess County DOH Department of Health. And I'll share some things that we gleaned from their files, then we'll talk a little bit about next steps. All right, I don't know if you can see this real well. I pulled a bunch of things. Some of them are scans. It's just a site location map. Front of the school, Haight Road is right there, part of the parking circle. You can see that when this was scanned that some of the contours pulled, but those are the existing contours as they existed in about 1999 before your more recent school project. Former farmland, cornfield. Very steep. It rolled way off. There was nothing over there at the time, so that's kind of a mental image of what things looked like 13 or 14 years ago, and you can still see some of the, over on this side over here, you can see some of the athletic facilities. What was proposed at the time, as I recall, was, and ultimately built, was a building addition over in this area. I'm sorry, I don't have a real good pointer. A building addition, and that happens to be where the old disposal system was situated. There were two systems, I think they were 1970s vintage, and they were going to be displaced by the school building additions. So with that as part of the history, let's go to the next slide. I completely forgot about it. I generally have a very good memory for these things, but we had involvement very early on in that particular project in 1999, working for Rhinebeck Architecture, and I actually found this letter in the Department of Health files because my letter found its way to Dutchess County, and I had done a site investigation, that's my name down in the lower right-hand corner.
And it, just to paraphrase what's in there, this is a very difficult site to put a wastewater treatment system on because the soils are very, very dense. They're not very permeable. Bedrock is close to the surface. All those things conspire to make it a very difficult site to do what we call a conventional wastewater treatment system on site. Just a little bit of background on what happens when the wastewater leaves the school, and it's about 4,000 gallons a day. Goes through a septic tank, and then it goes into a series of pipes and stone trenches, and then the idea is that it soaks into the ground. If you can imagine being on a sandy beach, water soaks in real fast. You know, remember when you're a kid and you take a bucket and pour it, goes right in. Clay soils, which you have that are native around here, over bedrock, doesn't allow a lot of water to go into the ground. And just paraphrasing what the results of my little study here were, we did perk tests, we did some deep test excavations. We did some not-so-deep test excavations because we hit rock at about 3 feet. And the conclusions here were that this site is not well-suited for a conventional system. And I went on to recommend a couple other things that could be done, a subsurface sand filter, which is one style of treatment, a mound system, which is a similar style of treatment that requires the importation of a lot of different soils, or completely reconfiguring the site to not impact the existing wastewater system that seems to be functioning okay. So there's a little bit of history. Kind of unusual, I find myself standing here in 2013, having written that letter in 1999. It surprised me when I found it, and then I went into my own files and found a file this thick. So let's go a little bit further ahead. This went with my letter in 1999. This is what was proposed at the time. I apologize that this is oriented differently from the last thing. Haight Road is up at the top this time. We did a lot of test excavations in this area right here, and we also went down in the steeper area down there, and we did some test pits, we dug some holes, and I summarized my findings to the architect. And also, when we did not continue on with this project, I sent all of my findings to the design engineer that ultimately designed the system on this site in about the year 2000. So that sort of concludes history. Let's go to the next slide. This is what the ultimate site layout looked like. I think the date on this drawing is 2002. You can see that the area that was once cornfield, and it had a big slope to it, is now a baseball field. Baseball fields and tennis courts don't like to have big slopes. All of those close contours that you see clustered around the edges that represent steep slopes are now gently almost flat fields, which are much better for playing baseball and soccer. What's hidden under that baseball field is 12 subsurface disposal beds, a bed being about 50 by 100 feet, many pipes running down it, buried in stone, and a substantial amount of fill was brought in and moved to that site to make the thing, to make it level. It used to have a drop-off of about 16 feet, and now it has a drop-off of about 3 feet. One of the next slides has, this is a little slide that we put together. The numbers that are in blue represent the amount of fill that exists there today. The box up at the top says 16 feet. It cascades back a little bit, 15, 10, 9, 5, and then the numbers drop off to where it actually was not fill. It was actually cut out there, but you can see that in the areas up in the top here where we first saw standing water at the surface, those are areas where you got 12, 13, 14 feet of fill. In my recommendation, that fill material would have been a very clean, free-draining material. Let's go to the next slide. This is a kind of a summary of what we did when we got out there. It's obviously overlaid on a new Google image. We like to do this because it's real easy to see and everybody recognizes what's going on when they see it. Again, I apologize. We've turned the orientation of this picture. We did two things when we were out there. We dug test holes in the area of bed number 9, which is at the top of my shadow there, bed number 5, and bed number 10. And in each of those cases, we found standing water at 6 inches deep. This was late last fall. It was very cold, according to my engineer. So as I said, we did two things. We did some field investigation. We wanted to dig some holes. We wanted to see where the water was trapped. We wanted to try and determine what was going on there. We also spent a bit of time in the system. We did some dye testing. We confirmed that the system was working the way that it was designed, that valves that were shut off were shut off. I actually skipped one important detail, that just about a year ago, we came out when there was some water out in beds 5 and 9, And I did a little bit of a literature search and determined that this particular field was, disposal system was designed with a little more than double the capacity that it actually needed. It's seeing about 4,000 gallons a day. It was designed for almost 10,000 gallons a day, and my recommendation was we shut off the two problematic beds and we limp along. The school limped along pretty well, but the water became more of a problem again this fall, and that's what precipitated this latest study. Here's where the problem is. We expected to find water in those areas, so then we said, let's go over to bed number one, which is up at the top right there. And we wanted to see what's going on in a bed that supposedly is working great. Remember, there's 12 beds. The two at the far end had been shut off. They still had water in them, even though they weren't receiving any flow for a period of about 6 months. And we find water in bed number one as well. That's bad news. What we've concluded is that this system is really heading down the road to failure. Got together last week and spoke with the superintendent, the business manager, and the facilities director. Sort of brought them up to speed on that, and that's why I'm here tonight to let the board know that there's a situation brewing out here. The system is still serving the school, but it's extremely marginal at this point. Water exists out in that field at a depth of only about 6 inches below the surface. It's really not suitable for sports anymore because it's just too wet. It doesn't dry out even in the summer. The soils that are there are really not suitable for perking in water. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how water perks. When you design these systems, we have a sort of an empirical measure that engineers use to determine how much water you can put in the ground, and it's called the perk test. Anybody who lives in the country knows they've heard the term perk test. And it's a relatively standardized test. You go out and you dig up a hole 12 inches in diameter, a couple of feet deep. You put a stick in it. It sounds really Rube Goldberg, but it's very effective when done properly. You fill the hole with water, and then you see how fast the level goes down. You get your stopwatch out. If it takes, after things reach equilibrium, if it takes more than 60 minutes for the water in the hole to fall 1 inch, then the soils are really not suitable for this kind of a septic system, a disposal system. So remember that number, 1 hour, 60 minutes. New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and most health departments will not accept conventional systems in soils that perk slower than 50 minutes, or 60 minutes. Let's go to the next slide, because when the contractor built this system, we found this in the health department files. There were perk tests that were done on the system in place as it was in April 2002. Bear in mind that in September 2002, the new additions to the building had to be done and completed because kids were going to be coming through the door. April 2002, so that's spring. We only got 3-4 months until to rep. I say we. I was involved. Contractor and the design team only had about 4 months to finish things up. Look at these perk tests. 250 minutes. 250 minutes. 125. 250. 63. 250. 23. 250. Failed miserably. Those made it to the county. County said no good. Obviously, that could not be accepted, and the county didn't accept it. So, those tests were done in April 2002. And bear in mind that when these systems get built, we like to test them in place as they're constructed. Let's go to the next slide. 2 months later, June 2002, perk tests come to the county, and now they're acceptable. 30, 15, 21, 7, 24, 24, 24. Generally, pretty good numbers. You like to see numbers. Obviously not more than 60, but numbers in that 10, 15, 20 range are really kind of optimal. You get good treatment, you know the water's going to go away. So 2 months later, we've got a system that's acceptable to the health department. It's a mystery what happened in those 2 months. We know that these tests were done shallower than would have been recommended. There's a note off to the side that says they were done at 12 inches. We don't know what that means. We weren't here. Previous tests were done much deeper at the pipe depth of around 28 to 32 inches. So this is just the facts. The facts are that these were the tests that were done in June, July, August, September, the building opened, and here we are 11 years later and we're in failure. These systems should go 15 plus years, and this system started to exhibit failure in about 10 years. So there's a situation out there. That brings us, I think, to the last slide. which is some alternatives analysis. Our study at this point was not to identify alternatives, it was to try to find out what the problem is, and we think that the problem is that the soils that were placed there were unsuitable for whatever reason. They may have been soils from this site, we don't know. We weren't there in construction. A lot more studying that we could do of the records that the construction manager would have to try and figure out exactly what went on, what soils went in there, and maybe what magic happened between April and June that produced those good perk tests. We have also started talking with Mark Lounsbury about some temporary measures, just in case, as we go through the spring. What happens in the spring? It rains. Rain hits those fields, that's additional water that gets on those fields, and maybe the need to do some temporary pumping to help relieve some of the flow that goes to those fields. I think there's some additional field work that we could do if you'd like to know a little bit more about what that field, how that was constructed. Field work meaning maybe some soil borings, using getting a drill rig in here to recover samples down 3, 6, 9, 12, as much as 15 feet deep to see exactly what's going on down there. Our work was limited to about as deep as we could dig with a post hole digger. And then, obviously, if you get down the road towards making improvements, which are quite likely to be necessary, you wind up with funding and New York State Education Department approvals, and then ultimately into design and construction if you choose to go that direction. So what I've tried to do here, without casting aspersions on or giving my opinion on what I think might have happened in terms of design and construction, is to try and just lay out the facts as we know them. And I guess raise a red flag that there's a time bomb out there that we're going to have to come, the school board is going to have to come to grips with in terms of doing some sort of an amendment or a fix or a replacement or something. So with that, I open it to the board for questions.
Why did the Board of Health accept 12-inch depth tests?
I don't know. You'd have to ask the Board of Health. Those tests, I think, are suspicious. Mm-hmm. But again, I wasn't here at the time, and there was a lot of interesting things going on between the Board of Health, the designer, the contractor. There had been site visits. There had been allegations. The record is very quiet on that in the school board, or I'm sorry, in the county health department's records.
Normally, a septic design would specify the type of soil to be used, would it not?
Yes, it would. We look for 7 to 11 minute perks on the ones that I've done. When you're importing soils, you specify the type of soil, what its nature is supposed to be, and how it's to be compacted, and what the target perk rate is after it's in place, ready to be put into use. And we like that 7 to 11 minute range. That way, if they miss it by a little bit and get it a little compact, you've still got a lot of room on the other end.
I mean, as a layman whose acquaintance with septic systems is having built a house of my own, I'm aware that brown silty loam is not something that ought to be
doesn't work well.
Thrown there.
I was here at the time, and as a person that farmed that land quite a lot as a student, the rocks were only about 6 inches below the surface, and we debated that a number of times at board meetings with the contractors and like that there was going to be a major problem there, and they assured us that it could be done and it would be done properly, but I'm not sure that any of us ever monitored the kind of fill that they were putting in. We assumed, I think, that they were doing it properly.
A question about that. So you did an analysis, sort of as a consultant, and you made recommendations, or you bid on the work and didn't get it, and we gave it to someone else?
Well, in 1999, I was working as a consultant to Rhinebeck Architecture, and our design team had done some of the very preliminary work. Probably may have even been pre-referendum work. Again,
yes.
This was a long time ago. I don't remember all the details. And in doing the pre-referendum work, the key thing that you need to know is what's the cost going to be? And you can't assess costs. There's a wide variety of costs for these systems if you can go out and build what we call a conventional system, which is cost-effective. Or do you need some other kind of system that's going to cost more money, be more complex, may even require a treatment plant or an operator? So our letter was was taking it to the point of making recommendations that, number one, you cannot do a conventional system as we think of, you're not just going to go out and dig trenches, put stone and pipes and a couple of distribution boxes and let it go. So flag number one in my letter was, you can't do that, so that ratchets you up to the next level in terms of cost. At the next level, we were looking at some type of a treatment system which would consist either of sand filters, which in the realm of cost, they're still not exorbitant. They're not up there with treatment plants where you have mechanical equipment and things like that. They're still very, very affordable, but they probably cost twice as much as a conventional system. Or a mound system. Mound systems get to be very expensive because there's a lot of material that needs to be brought in, and all that material comes in by the yard, and it costs money. It's not just a simple matter of taking soil from one side of the site and inexpensively moving it to the other and repurposing it. So our letters only went as far as to say, here's what you can't do, here's what we recommend that you do, and it was enough to get costs together to know what the level of effort was going to be going forward. And at that point, our design team was not retained.
Okay. Yeah. Is the old system still in place, and is there any chance that can be reused?
It's under the addition.
It's under the addition.
Yeah. The reason that a new system was needed was because the old one was going to be displaced by the new construction. I know that you couldn't read my letter up on the screen, but I threw three alternatives out there. One was a sand filter, mm-hmm. one was a mound system, yeah. and one was move the building. put the building somewhere else so that you don't touch that one, which at the time seemed to be doing okay. Even in difficult circumstances, it seemed to be okay.
You have up there additional field work. Is that for sort of like diagnostic, or is that to, you talked about digging deep holes and doing something. Is that to give you more information, or is that to remedy this?
It would be to give us more information going forward, because one of the things that we could do is, I'm standing here today, I still don't know, I'm not sure what the solution should be. We've got a range of solutions out there that could range between, I'm just going to throw numbers out there, and these are very preliminary, it could be $300,000 and up. And I don't know if we're at the 300 side or the upside, because we haven't really gotten to that. The purpose of our study that we've just now concluded was to find out what the problem is, and I think we've done that. We know what the problem is, and we know that it's more of a problem than was previously thought. So now we need to go forward and find out what the solution is, and that's going to involve a little bit more study and some cost estimating to determine what exactly will the health department allow to be put back there. And I can assure you that this is a difficult site. We had a laugh last week because when I went and dug back through our old files and I found my file on this job, I think it was in the year 2000, December 2000, I didn't bring it with me. The ultimate designer of the system, who was a firm in Syracuse, called me and was asking me questions, and I sent them my results with a fax cover sheet with two words on it: good luck. Very ominous. So this is a tough site, you know.
So I have I don't know anything about this either, but I have a vision in my mind that you just bring in the fill that you're talking about and build some kind of retaining wall and hold it all there. And
yeah, one of the alternatives is to go out and excavate 6 of the 12 beds and take all the material that's in there out. It's about 11,000 yards of material, and replace it with a clean, free-draining material. That's one of the alternatives. 11,000 yards of material, at $30 a yard in and out. Where's the math teacher? It's over $300,000 if you get the zeros lined up.
You can't just,
And it's going to be complicated.
And it's complicated. I'm not convinced.
Bringing heavy equipment into an area that does have steep slopes.
One of the things that I struggle with is I'm not sure that's the best solution. Because I wasn't wild about that solution when I first came to this site. I would still want to investigate. There's newer technologies out there in the last 10 years. I would want to investigate with the health department whether or not some of these newer technologies that have a smaller footprint might be approvable with some sort of a surface discharge to one of the local wetlands. I wouldn't rule that out, and I think that can cost quite a bit less money. Maybe. We haven't really studied that yet. Now we're into an alternatives analysis. We need to come up with two or three alternatives, determine if they're feasible, determine if they can be approved by the county, and put a cost to them, and then come back here in another couple of months and say, okay, here's what we did, here's what we recommend. And at that point in time, I would be able to give you a hard recommendation. At this point, our study came to the point that we said it would, and we've arrived at our conclusion, but now we almost need to go from the study level into a preliminary design level to come up with costs. Yeah. And, you know, it begs the question going forward, you don't go out and spend that kind of money without education department approvals, without bonding authority and things like that. And those are all school board issues.
So we are not playing sports there. I mean, I know we said it looked bad, but that's done, huh?
Right, John, it's got Tom Lavinia on standby.
I thought that was like plan, I thought that was plan B and,
all right. Yeah, but if I could just ask a question, is the area of the, we can't play games there, but is the infield area usable?
I think that would almost be a day-by-day call, okay. Because I think I haven't been out there since back in the fall. The infield was okay. It was the outfield that was really bad. And in fact, those areas are still open. There's still water sitting in those areas. And the two beds out there, bed number 5 and number 9, hasn't received a drop of water since last spring, and they're still flooded. So the water's just simply not going down. Could the infield be used on a limited basis? I know that infield practice is very important to a baseball team. When we design fields, many times we design a full field and then just another infield because it more than doubles what you can do with your practices. I think that would be on a case-by-case basis. Mark Lounsbury can take a look at things. And if things are not squishy and if water's not too close to the surface, I think you could have an infield practice, but I think you'd want to look at it. Standing here today in February, I can't make a promise. Kind of depends on what kind of a spring we have, too. If we have a long, wet, miserable spring, it could be one thing. If we have a quick, lot of wind to dry things out, it might dry out. Mark tells me that it has difficulty drying out.
Are you saying that it's clean? It's clean and safe? If
there's no water at the surface, it should be. It's when you get water at the surface that you really don't want to be there. And when I say the surface, I mean you don't want to be squishing along there. It's got to feel like you're walking
it's
on
a septic,
reasonably dry soil.
Yeah. I think at this point we would decide we'll look at alternatives rather than trying to go day by day with baseball.
Are we being monitored by the Department of Health on a regular basis right now because of this? Or
no, you're not.
No. Okay.
And again, we talked with the health department. We told them that there were certain challenges out here, but that we hadn't really gotten to the point of waving the red flag yet.
Okay.
I think the system is still functioning. It's just not functioning adequately. One of the things that we have in our favor at this point going forward is that original system was designed for almost 10,000 gallons a day, and that was based on guidelines that were in place at the time by the local regulating authorities. The school district now has good hard water usage numbers for a period of years that shows that it's really about 4,000 gallons a day. So the designer, we don't have to go out and replicate the size and capacity of that field. If I was going to pick a design number, knowing that you've got good hard numbers that demonstrate 4,000 gallons a day, I'd put a factor of safety on top of that and design it for maybe 5,000, knowing that under most circumstances would be adequate. That helps out quite a bit because there's a big difference between 5 and 10. And in fact, what we've been able to do out there in the last year is use some of that reserve capacity to shift water over to the other side of the bed, which is what I hoped would, I hope that limping along would go more than just a year. And by this spring, it'll be about a year. So we limped, but we didn't limp that long.
So we'll go forward and look for some recommendations in a couple of months.
Sooner than that, I hope. Yeah, I think you're going to need recommendations no later than a couple of months, and probably in the interim, going to need to sit back down with you and the business administrator and talk about funding, financing, things like that, all the things that come along with these things, and begin to talk with the Ed Department too.
We've called, have only been able to leave those nails at this point, but we are definitely starting to pursue that angle as well.
Any other questions?
Are there warranties for this type of work?
1 year.
Is that it?
General municipal law provides for a 1 year warranty on all civil works.
Interesting.
We've exceeded that.
Yeah.
There's a feeling out there that, I mean, I know from my experience, and I've been doing this for almost 30 years, is that in-ground systems do have a finite life. The health department was hoping for 15 years out of that system. I would expect, knowing that it's got so much extra capacity in it, and which makes it very lightly loaded, that it really should have gone a lot longer than that. I would expect a lot longer, but again, you never know. But I also think that there's more investigation to be done with respect to files that the construction manager may have. Still, there's unanswered questions out there, and the burning questions may want to be answered.
Yeah, a warranty is one thing, but not doing something to design specs doesn't have a 1 year limit, I would hope.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. I'll be back in touch with the superintendent and with the building business manager. We'll see to get things going.
Thank you.
The garden.
Kevin, thank you.
Not have a good feeling about that.
Can you see it? Visual.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night. Thanks.
They cut down the forest.
Remember them moving a lot of he's kept moving dirt and moving dirt.
I don't remember that as much.
Well, I was by the window. Which was a lot of dirt.
Okay, I guess if we want to get out of here, we're up to public comment.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to soon.
Yes.
Mr. Perroy.
Yes.
I remember when this building was built, and right in the middle of the building, problem with the septic came up.
That's right.
That was a big problem.
That was a big problem. We discussed it many times, didn't we?
Many times is right.
And we told them we didn't think they could do it, and they did it.
Exactly. I don't understand how this happened. However, my question is, do we have somebody else in mind to ask about it? Or is this the only person?
Are you talking about asking going forward with fixing?
What I'm asking is, say for example, I'm doing my house, right? I'm doing a septic system in my house. I will call Superior, I will call the late guy, and I will call the other guy. And some people agree with them, he will be in the same situation. The reason why I'm saying this is because, like he said, it's a warranty for a year. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars. So when me personally, I think of hundreds, I say, wait a minute, let me just make sure that this is what it is, and it's not somebody telling me this, and then 10 years down the road, the same situation is gonna happen. Like you said, today we have a lot of new things that we do. And being in the construction business, I remember working in Mamaroneck at one time, and their septic couldn't be there. We have septics, but they couldn't dump the water into the sound. So that was a different system. Like he said, there is different options
for right.
that. Mm-hmm. So now we have to think about the options. However, we have to do these options with people that know what they're doing.
Correct me if I say anything that's not accurate here, but right now what we're doing is getting advice. Now, when we did the project years ago to begin with, Rhinebeck Architecture was hired to do the pre-referendum work and was very specifically not hired to continue because we felt that gave someone an edge if they had done the pre-referendum work. Didn't turn out so well for us because they actually got it right on this system. We went out to bid with proposals for all of the rest of it that was done. The people who did it were picked from a bunch of other people, so simply getting other bids doesn't guarantee anything, unfortunately. But at this stage, what they're doing is doing the investigation. You can get someone to come to your house to give you estimates, and they don't charge you. This is not free, what they're doing, so we don't want to pay three different people to give us some advice. What you do is go out to bid once you have some general advice and information, and the Department of Health has to approve it and look at it. Of course, they approved and looked at this system, and there appears to be some question as to what happened, but what they're doing right now is not building it. They're just doing investigation work. That's all.
I understand that. I didn't say anything about that. All I'm saying is there is a difference. Okay, here's what happened. And those here, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Barotti. The building, construction of this building here was set at, let's say, I'm not sure right now because I can't remember either, $20 million. It went on into
that's about million. Right.
But we didn't have enough money to build it. That's that thing. So what happens is instead of going frugal, we went cheap. And that's what happens when you go cheap.
I don't think that's what happened because if I recall, the whole project came in under budget. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that's what happened. But I have some reservations and what kind of material was put in for the fill. And it may or may not have been the right material. And by this group doing the testing, we may find out. I don't know.
Well, there's no question. That's what
he was
proposing.
Whoever filled it, not even Sandy, silky ones.
So now, if the material wasn't right, you could actually go back to the person that did it and say, okay, you didn't do this right. Yeah. You're going to redo it.
Whoever was the clerk of the works or whatever the terminology was for the person that was doing the oversight at the time.
Right.
I mean, there may be some, we don't know, but I mean, when we get all the information, there could be some course that we could take to recoup some.
This is what we're looking at now.
I was just saying that it would be nice to, you know, look at other people and say, well, you know what, because even for it to go out into bidding, who's going to bid on a job that they don't know exactly what's going on? Or they're not going to take on somebody saying something.
Sure they are. You pay for specs. Yes, because they're a certified engineer. The testing they do has to meet specs, and you are supposed to be able to count on it, which is why they sent their testing last time.
They did it before.
This guy isn't the guy that's the problem. The people who built it are the problem.
This is not the guy that built it.
No. I know that. That's what you're saying. Never mind. You're not understanding what I'm saying.
It will be done according to what has to be done. There are fairly rigid procedures we have to follow in order to do this. But nobody can guard against someone who cuts corners. I'm not saying corners were cut here. I have no idea. But there does appear to be a question as to what happened. So we need to look into that.
But thank you for your...
No, because I remember being here. Actually, I was working for the contractor who did it. And he wouldn't let me work in this building because I was also a taxpayer.
That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. And there was a lot of questions that I knew because I was working right at the time. I was doing Briarcliff Elementary School. So I knew, at the time... I said, okay, I knew what was happening because the word would get around. We were doing actually four schools at the time. And this was one of the worst schools happening because of the budget situation. That's why I said.
The budget, it didn't cost twice, and it wasn't going to cost twice. I don't know where you got that from, but that is not what happened.
I'm just saying, I can't say that it cost twice. That's why I said, don't quote me on that.
Okay.
I'm just saying, you know.
Okay. At any rate, any other public comment? Nope. Okay. And we do not have a student report tonight.
Taylor told me today she was not available.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And superintendent's report?
Okay, just two quick things. Update on the Power Authority, I put it in my report. They're still waiting for the New York State Historical Society to sign off on it. So they have to sign off on it. He again apologized over and over for not being here. And he was supposed to be here in January, but he doesn't want to waste our time. March 11th is his target date to be here.
Okay.
And update on the building, the immediate building agreement. I got a call from Supervisor Flood saying that the doors are in, it was ready to go. So our attorneys have sent the agreement to their attorneys. Mark Lonsberry and I will go make sure of that personally.
I'll come with you. When are you guys going?
You call, you tell me, I'm always here.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd love to go see it too.
Do you have a plan?
Okay. I can any day this week.
During the day, I'm okay. It's only, once it hits 3:30,
okay.
I'm
it would be good. A few other people are here, so. Just text me in the morning.
Okay.
I could go at some point tomorrow.
Okay. Text me anytime. But the agreement has been amended to add internet and phone mm-hmm. services provided by the town,
okay.
So that we don't have to discuss that at some future point.
And okay.
And there's furniture in the Millerton building. I went to see if there was anything we could use. There's some furniture that's just fine that we can put in there to set the room up. Good to go. So hopefully within a month, well before the lawn mowing season, we'll be done.
Excellent.
And I would just say we did. Mary Gerb and I have tried three times to reach Carl Thurno, who's the facilities person at State Education. And he's the man who will have to work through this, whether it's an emergency project, which we don't think it will be, whether it will be aidable, which we don't think it will be, but we want to make sure that he's in the loop on this. So we were waiting for a call back. She said if we say the word superintendent, maybe he'll answer, because he didn't pick up for business official. And he didn't pick up for superintendent either.
How long, is this like long term, you know?
Well,
like,
we want to get it going, because whatever's going to happen, we have to get it done over the summer.
Yeah.
So.
But I mean, how long is this guy denying your call?
Since last week. We did not anticipate.
Mind-boggling how people
when
can
they
do
said it. They wanted to come in and see us, we did not have any inkling that this was what they were going to report. We thought they were going to give us something more easy to swallow, or not as startling as it was. We were just stunned. So, but they, by design, they did their findings. They didn't come in to surprise us, but they didn't give us any inkling either of where we were headed. So we called right after they walked out of the room. We got tried to get Carl Thurno on the phone. But in any case, he will get back to us as well. And that's all I have.
Okay, the consent agenda vote. Is there anything anyone wants pulled off the consent agenda?
No.
Okay.
I was thinking I would like number, or letter D of the...
letter D?
Personnel.
Okay.
Personnel, please.
Okay, you will pull 8D off.
Thank you.
However, okay, curriculum instruction just needs to get changed to 9.
Oops.
I'm going to accept the consent agenda as amended.
Second? Anybody?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? That vote passes. Okay, I think that's basically it, except for
committee
reports. Yeah.
I can do committee reports in short order.
Okay.
Policy committee has completed the 6,000s. We're proud of that. We will start working on the 7,000s as soon as possible. Finance Committee met on February 4th, and we'll meet again every Monday in March. We will be closer to having some real numbers to begin with by March 4th. Negotiations, CSEA ratification vote is on February 21st, and they'll give us the results after that. I'm going to schedule an informal meeting with the teachers as soon as possible. Facilities committee is going to need to meet on the septic system issues. And the safety committee meeting, the district-wide committee, is on March 8th. In the meantime, we're collecting input from any staff member that wants to provide it for ideas that they may have. And also looking at costs to increasing this, the camera system, if that's an option that we want to consider. And also looking into what it costs us to reinstate a school resource officer. So hopefully we'll have some real numbers by March 8th when that meeting arrives.
Okay.
I went to that Dutchess County School Board meeting last week, and it was there was the lawyer. I'm forgetting his name. It was just an update on how negotiations were going in the district, or from his perspective. David Shaw was the guy.
Right.
Okay. And so he just said that Dutchess County, in a sense, was just doing very traditional. You know, there was increases above step. Westchester and I think across the river had some other interesting one where they were trying to do some of the things that we were trying to do as far as health insurance and just a sum of money not added to the, but he said really for the most part he was kind of intrigued that Dutchess really didn't change. They were,
how many settlements have there been in Dutchess?
I went around the table and he didn't talk about specifics. He talked a little bit about Dover, right? And mm-hmm. then it was...
Because Beacon had settled a while back, and right. I did not think that was traditional, but I could be wrong.
I don't think Beacon... Beacon was the one that had the half-year step right. payment for okay. teachers. They had delayed it.
Okay, yeah. I'm just going... It was kind of a general right. piece of it, but, yeah, I mean, I could find out
okay.
an email for that.
Yeah, specifics help because, yeah. again, impressions are not different.
Well, it was, right, it was interesting because I thought, oh, everybody else was kind of looking for similar things.
And yeah.
He said he saw, he mentioned a few in Westchester, but, okay. But I can follow up on that, see if I can get some more information.
Okay.
Or get the specifics that I heard but didn't pay attention to.
Do we need to do 9D in the executive session?
Right. Now we pulled off 9D. Do you want to go to that, or do you want to handle that in executive session?
We can go to that.
Okay.
Question. Is this person listed able to get paid medical leave? He hasn't been here that long, has he?
He has a little bit of paid medical leave left, but not much. He already has exhausted almost all of it, but I think he has...
Okay, so that's why it's paid / unpaid.
Yes, mm-hmm. because okay. he's going to follow their FMLA regulations, but he does have a limited amount of time that he would like to use.
That was my question.
Okay. Can I hear a motion then on approving that?
Sure. That we approve it.
Sure.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Yep. I have to remember the vote. Okay, take that as an awe. Okay, public comment again? Anyone have anything else to say? Okay, could I get a motion to move to executive session?
I move that we go to executive session to discuss the employment history of a particular person or persons.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Me too, quick.
Thank you.